Welcome to the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Oral History Project, where we record the oral histories of current and former DOC employees. I'm DOC Communications Director Susan McNaughton. This oral history focuses on memories from the October 1989 riot at the State Correctional Institution at Camp Hill. Our guest today, October 2nd, 2019, is Mike Leidy. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
You're welcome.
As we begin, could you please provide us with a brief overview of your DOC career?
Sure. I started at, I worked in Lancaster County Prison from 1972 to 1978 before I took a job at the FCI Camp Hill as a trainee. I started at Camp Hill as corrections officer trainee in August of 1978. And about 1983, I took a job as training coordinator at the prison, which means I'm responsible for in-service, pre-service, and out-service training. A lot of my job was orientation of new employees, and that's what was going on the day of the riot.
Okay. And then where did you finally end your career?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I left Camp Hill to go to the Department of Training Academy, E-Town, 1991 or 92. And I did a couple of different things there. It was management training, and I was one of the curriculum development, which means I worked at putting together all the training for the state at the time. And then in 2002, I took a job at Laurel Highlands, SCL Laurel Highlands in Somerset, as a unit manager.
Okay.
And that's retired from there in 2009.
Wow. Okay. Long career. Congratulations on
that. Yeah, it was.
All right, so let's get to the riot. It's around 2:30. Okay. It's around 2:33 p.m. on Wednesday, October 25th, 1989. Where are you and what's happening?
Okay, my office, my training, all training area was inside the compound, above the gymnasium, between E gate and the main yard gate. So the training sergeants at the time were also had their offices there and started to Dan Fry had to come in and get his paperwork together, and I heard a call on his radio about a fight at E Gate. So I walked down to the bottom of the steps to look to see what I could see, just being nosy. At that point, we didn't see anything, so I just came back upstairs. I forgot to mention I had three new trainees with me that day. They had started on Monday at 8 o'clock, and this is like their third day in a prison. So, anyhow, back upstairs. Nothing out of the ordinary. Sergeant Fry went about his way, and about maybe 5 minutes later, I heard the screeching of tires and the banging, and I looked out. There was a Jeep, or forget what type of vehicle it was, for maintenance, banging into the doors of the commissary, which was right across the street. I could see from my window. At this point, I realized there was something bad going on, obviously, and told the trainees, you guys stay out the windows, turn out the lights. We're not going to let anybody know we're up here. So in the meantime, I heard this continued screeching, and the guy ran in the Jeep, the inmate in the Jeep, run through the gate of the field and all the way across the field and tried to break through the outer fence. He could break through the outer fence, or the inner fence, and he got hung up there and he just ran back into the prison. Mm. So I looked outside my side window towards the modular units, and I could see him dragging an officer out in handcuffs, the laundry units, inmates dragging an officer out. I said to these guys, hey, this is bad. Just chill out. Like I said, don't let anybody know we're up here. So we just kind of sat there. But in the meantime, every so often I would take a peek out. Well, back up a little bit. I called control to let them know that we were up there. And if anything, as the inmates started to break in, we're going to go up the back steps and go hide underneath a boxing rink from the old boxing program, which was, there's a steps set of steps right down there to the base of the gym, and the boxing rink was. On and off through the last couple hours, last hours of the riot, I looked out just to see bedlam, you know, just people running around, all that stuff. In the meantime, I was basically trying to calm these three new officers. They weren't really hyped, but they didn't know what was going on. Of course, at that point, I didn't either, for sure. you know, cut to the chase, maybe, well, I'll tell you a humorous, funny story.
Mm-hmm.
At 4 o'clock that afternoon, which is pretty time for the new guys, one of them came up to me and said, "Mr. Lloyd, do you have a question?" I thought the guy was going to ask me, "Am I going to die?" I said, "What do you need? What's up?" He said, "Are you going to pay me overtime or stay after 4 o'clock?" True story.
Oh.
I said, "Yeah, we'll pay. Yeah, they'll pay you overtime. Don't worry about it." Turned to be a good state employee. I'm sure he retired, but it's a whole different story. Anyhow, maybe 6:30, 7 o'clock that evening, I had seen Captain John Kerry come down onto the main yard, and kind of like was directing in my traffic. So things must be, you know, getting a little bit better. So I looked up the side window and I saw an officer and a state trooper walking down the road outside my door. So I hollered out the officer, who was, you can take his name out if you want, Harry Himes. You probably know Harry.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I said, "Harry, can I come out now? Is everything cool? Is it safe?" And the state cop said, "Who's he?" Harry says, "I don't know. You better shoot him." Honest to God. Harry says, "No time to play games. Get me the hell out of here." Anyhow, we get out of there and went over to group one where the captain's office was. And Major Stover met me at the entrance to control and said, "Hey, do me a favor. I heard there's some people trapped in a plumbing shop, which is an 8-day block. We get out and check it out." Sure, what am I supposed to do? Say no. Yeah. So I took these three trainees with me, they don't know what's going on, and went down to the basement of the plumbing shop. But sure enough, there were three guys down there who had three officers, or not maintenance guys, who had gotten out through the boiler plant, through the tunnels in the basement of A block where the plumbing shop was. So I got them out and just threw them. I don't know exactly what I did, but I kind of hung around the captain's office and saw all this stuff happening, bringing hostages out and all those good things. But
can I just interrupt you here? I had a couple
sure.
questions. The first question was, when you called control and said, "Okay, you know, we'll try to go out the back door," what did they say to you?
Okay.
That was
That's
it?
All.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I wrote it down or anybody knew, because I got the call like 2 days later from someone said, where were you hiding?
Well, I'm sure they were getting inundated with phone calls from all over the prison.
Oh, so. I know.
And then the other thing was, so you were upstairs. Where were you in relation to the music room where Jerry Kostolac was?
Opposite end of the gym. The kitchen was in the middle.
Gotcha.
It divides the music room and faced the kitchen. The music room was on the left.
Okay.
And the training area was on the right.
Okay.
It used to be the old training academy before they moved up the drive.
Okay, and then, so did you know that Jerry was stuck? That was the
same
night.
No, I had no idea what was going on around me.
Okay. So you got out.
I did also.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I remember also telling the kitchen tower that I was up there, because you could see the kitchen tower from my window. I tried to let as many people know where I was or was going to be as I possibly could.
Right.
So, now. Mm-hmm. Back to getting out and going to the captain's office and just hung around all night, seeing what I could do, help answer phones, whatever I could do over that particular area. There was the inmates were barricaded primarily behind the gate at the time. So there wasn't anything I could do. There was like 100 people over there. So I just stuck around to see what I could do over there. And I remember distinctly one of the hostages that was released coming into the captain's office and said, "Hey, Mike, have you seen my wedding ring?" Yeah, okay, right. You know, I just felt sorry for the guy because in the middle of stuff looking for his wedding ring. Anyhow, long story short, back to that. About, I don't know, sometime in the afternoon, it was a call for all district staff, which was part of, to report up to the commissioner's office for a phone call, conference call for the governor. I don't know if you heard about the conference call yet or not.
No.
So I'm up there listening to what he had to say, congratulate us for a job well done, all this stuff. Everybody thought this was over, all the events that returned to their cells, and at this point, I had no idea how bad the cells were, because I hadn't been over there yet. I heard there was a lot of contraband stuff laid out on the walks, but I hadn't been over to the cell blocks. There was no need. There was plenty of officers over there. I didn't want to get in the way. So I went up there, heard this thing, and then after this, talking to a couple guys, I heard the locks were broken and wasn't secure, but they were getting chains and padlocks and stuff to put on the doors, is what I was told. So basically, I went home, and about, I don't know what time I got home, but probably sometime early in the evening, whatever time kicked off the second night, I was sleeping because I hadn't slept all night, obviously, and my sister-in-law called me and said, turn the TV on, Campbell's burning down. It's okay. I thought it was supposed to reruns from the first night. Then I realized it was live. And so got the car, 80 miles an hour up to 83. State cops passed me like I'm standing still. Got to the prison. And ran across Dale Hartman, who was running the armory at the time. And he said, Mike, I bought guns. So, okay. So there was a CO trainee there. I was only there a couple months. I said, hey, trainee, give me your gun. I took a trainee off the gun off the trainee's hips, and basically did what I could. I mean, we went inside the prison, and the first 5 yards of the prison, maybe 10 yards, was friendly territory with the rest of the prison. It was inhabited by inmates running around rampant. There were several officers there with shotguns. When the inmates flexed cuffed the ground right in front of the main gate and all that stuff. So, again, there wasn't much I could do inside at this point. So backed out and went into the armory and spent most of the night in the armory with Dale Hartman handing out weapons that we could find.
So that was the night that all of the Camp Hill staffers were stuck above control.
Right. They had just gotten out because they were, I remember seeing, I know you thought the Sammy Smith would went to us. I saw Sammy sitting with a blanket over his shoulders and a couple of guys sitting there with their heads down, shoulders covered with blankets and all that stuff. And I said, what the hell happened? And that's when I found out they just got out of control like maybe 5 minutes before I'd gotten there.
Oh, okay.
And I do remember going inside for a little bit more. I was over in the, and all, it's all kind of a blur. I was over in a group 1 and 2 yard when inmates were breaking out of the flex cuffs. And Lieutenant came to me, said, Mike, get me some state cops. I need some help down here. So we got state police. And I wound up over back in group 2 and 3 at a secure fence. Still inside the prison, but it was a perimeter fence that had breached. It was still barricaded. Watching things burn and all this other stuff happen. The reason I'm telling this story is I remember Joe sitting down crying. I didn't cry, but a good friend of mine and well respected sergeant, who I'm not going to name, he's passed away now, may rest in peace, all of a sudden turned to me and started bawling his eyes out. And I remember hugging this guy at the gate inside the prison. Said it's going to be okay, you know. And that kind of broke me down too. But I mean, I never really lost it. So, I thought I'd never a lot more than I do.
What's that?
I thought I'd remember a lot more than I do. A lot more details. It's been so long.
Tell me about like what it looked like in there. I mean, people have compared it to, you know, a war zone.
Yeah, exactly. What I often say to people is every corrections employees, or KFL corrections employees, Vietnam experience. It was like a war zone, just screaming and hollering and, you know, chainsaws running, inmates beating people, and just god-awful.
Do you remember how that night ended? Or I guess it ended in the early morning.
Yeah, I remember the... I wasn't inside the prison, back outside. I think I had to do something back with Dale or stuff, but I know we handed out more shotguns on the perimeter. They had gotten us loaded shotguns from Dallas prison, and they weren't the regular, they were old ones from the armory, and we had to show people how to operate these shotguns. So we did that, and shortly after we did that, we got word that state police had stormed prison and started taking the place back, and they're calling for ambulances. I remember the same guy that was talking about it was crying a couple seconds before. I think we're outside the main gate at this point. That's where the ambulances were coming out. And he said, Mike, I just got word that my good friend, and he mentioned Harold Maurer in one of your... So he mentioned Harold. I think that's the guy Joe Miller picked up off the ground, too, by the way, you're looking for.
Yeah.
Anyhow, this guy and Harold were friends. He said, Mike, I'm going to get Harold. I don't care how bad I feel. Now, this sergeant... His face was all caved in from a pipe, black and blue, and eyes swollen and everything else. And he jumped on the back of the ambulance to go and help his friend out. That's something I wish I would have had a camera for, just take a picture.
Was that sergeant a hostage that his face was beat in? Or?
No, he was just part of the overthrow of the prison the first night.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I don't know. When there were several guys who were beaten and managed to get away. Or they were held hostage. At this point, I don't know who was held hostage or who wasn't.
Right.
And I recognized a couple of guys that were letting out. I remember the inmates come over. No, officers come over and threw a guy on the ground in front of the control center, handcuffed, he had his back dressed in browns. And I recognized him as an officer. Funny story, but I was clutching an apple. For some reason, metal image always stick in my mind. I'm dumping this guy on the floor, and he's holding on an apple for dear life. So yeah, I heard the state police come back and taking the place back. And somewhere around, I don't know, back up a little bit, 3 or 4 in the morning, I happened to be in the administration building doing something, getting something. And a switchboard operator said, I thought you went home. Your wife just called. Her father died in the middle of this whole thing.
Oh.
So I couldn't get home there without anything of that till next day. So it was like, I mean, 11, 12 on Friday morning now we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had to stop and think. I was living in Purple. And who drove? Where's the guy I rode with? So we finally connected and went home. Went to my... father-in-law's funeral on Saturday, and then come back in Sunday and work the what I could. 12 hours a day like everybody else, just cleaning up stuff, getting, you know, cells ready, and just what we could do.
Wow. Amazing.
So, the scariest part was being trapped up in the office. And if I had not had 3 trays, I think Jerry had a couple inmates with him.
Mm-hmm.
Which would have probably been even scarier, but I was able to kind of mother hen these 3 trainees. So it was like, I didn't want to let them know I was scared to hell, to death.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of helped me, I think, not to be scared too badly. Although I was worried, like I said, the inmates were going to come up through there and get us out of there, drag us out. Now, bring chaos on Thursday night, they did burn down the whole training area, my office, the desks in place, and everything else. So I lost everything I had in the office, the training room.
Mm. Wow. Amazing. Talk to me about debriefing. What was debriefing like?
Well, it was not till about 2 weeks later. When my boss, Jan Smith, at the time says, Mike, Major Stover called me. He's worried about you. He wants to go to debriefing. It's okay. When and where? So it was 2 capable employees, maybe related to debriefing, Bob Spurk and Lewis Carter, his name was, both psychology staff. And like you've probably heard from everybody else, we wound up debriefing them as much as they wound up debriefing us. We had to go around and tell us when we saw what happened, you know, all that stuff. And of course, the Millis thing, they were telling us more about them than more than us, more than listening to what we were saying. So it wasn't really a debrief, it was mainly a storytelling session.
Right.
I remember it didn't last long, maybe 15 minutes.
Wow.
I just really respect the people that were beaten and held hostage, particularly, and I know each person is different, but I really respect the people who were able to come back to work within days, like nothing happened to them. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Right, because there were a lot of people like that. A good
yeah,
amount.
There was more people than that, just good people, just wanted to help the brothers and sisters in the jail.
Yeah, and what I find that is consistent in all the interviews is that the second night, everybody was watching TV or was told, hey, turn on your TV, and they're like, oh, no, that was last night. Their reaction was all the same.
Exactly.
And then they realized, oh, no, this is really happening. And the first reaction after that was, I have to go. And everybody felt this need to respond, and they did. And
No one called anybody. It was too much confusion for anybody to call anybody in.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like an automatic response. Everybody was somewhere else. Well, not everybody, or some people weren't working, or somewhere else doing their own thing. And heard it one way, in the shape, or form. I've read a couple of stories about how people heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are saying the same thing I did. They've heard it on the news or TV, or someone called them and said, turn the TV on.
Yeah.
And they just went without being called.
My husband and I were driving in our car, and we were over near the Capital City Mall, and I smelled this smoke, and I thought, ugh, I hope that's not the prison. And for some reason, that was my thought, and I turned on the radio, and sure enough, they were reporting that it was back happening again. So my husband and I said, take me to work. And so, you know, we were all in the same area, all doing pretty much the same thing, and we all converged back on the prison. And
it's amazing.
It is
amazing. Was instinct.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a helpless feeling not being able to do anything. That was, I remember that more than anything.
Right.
I had to do something.
Yeah. And then the great relief when the state police took it over, it was just kind of like a big sigh of relief that you knew things were going to be better, not necessarily normal.
Better, but they were normal.
Yeah. And it greatly changed the department.
The department has not been normal, whatever it is, since I've worked for it.
Right. Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to share?
No, ma'am. I hope it was of some assistance. Like I said, my thoughts are rambling.
Yeah.
I can't
it's great.
Anything.
It's great. I get little tidbits of the picture from, you know, it's like putting a huge puzzle together, and everybody has a different piece of the puzzle. Very interesting.
Uh-huh.
And so I appreciate you taking time to participate in this.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Thanks.